Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
Hello, everyone. How many of you have read the Netflix Culture Deck? Ooh, about 60 of you. Think of that as a recruiting tactic. So I spent some time last night scraping and parsing the interwebs, and I've captured some statements, some cultural values of three different companies. And I'd love to, if you could let me know which of these companies sort of resonate with you. So company A, how many of have arms that work? Oh, awesome. Okay, so company A, we keep only our highly effective people. Career advancements about a great role at the next company. You thrive on change, unlimited vacation, and we pay top of market. That's company A. Company B, we keep only effective people. We invent mechanisms for career development. We do not compromise for sake of social cohesion. We avoid rules, and we embrace frugality. Company C, we make big, bold bets. We ensure people of diverse backgrounds feel welcome. We value ideas over hierarchy. We work tirelessly to earn our customers' trust, and we do the right thing, period. So I've given you company A, I've given you company B, and I've given you company C. So who's in with company A? Lonely. How about company B? Oh, lonely. Okay, I'm guessing. Company C. Almost all of you. So I'm sure you're curious to know which company you just joined. So company A is Netflix. And company B is Amazon. And congratulations, everyone in the room. You just joined Uber. Now, Uber has had a couple of missteps in the last few years, largely a consequence of the culture and a certain lack of ethics. And what do I want you to learn here? So in this case, the fish does stink from the head, okay? But it's not good enough just to say things. You need to walk the talk. The second is that culture takes constant care and reinforcement, or it gets lost along the way. And there's a concept of both magnets and repellents. How many of you were repelled by this statement of frugality? And how many were actually attracted to that statement of frugality? Right, so I had about 10 attracted and about 50 that were repelled by it. And that is the concept of magnets and repellents, the things that make a culture unique and help find the people that are right or not right for the company. And the last, if done correctly, it helps you to evaluate fit as an employee or as an employer. So this is my background. The key thing to understand here first is I'm older than dirt. Okay, I think I got like 30 years of product management experience. How many of you have used Oregon Trails as software? I worked on that, okay? So I joined Netflix in 2005, and then I moved on to Chegg, which is a textbook rental company, in 2010. This talk's got three chapters. The first is I'm going to spend a little time defining what the heck is meant by culture. The second is I'm going to give you an inside view on the Netflix culture. And then the third is I'm going to introduce to you the Dell model. And I'm hoping, because I've repeated DEL, that you'll remember it for me. But it's really, what can you bring tomorrow to your work to reflect on these ideas? So for me, culture is trying to solve a problem. And the problem is this. As companies grow, so does complexity. And with complexity comes this overwhelming need for rules and process. But rules inhibit both creativity and talent. Who wants to work for a company that's full of rules? I don't. And that happens just at the moment that you require more creativity and more talented employees. And there's got to be a better way. And for me, that's about culture. So I think of culture as a leadership tool. I think of it as one of the fastest and most effective ways to make great decisions without even talking to each other if you truly understand the values and behaviors that are sought within a company. If done well, it helps to articulate best fit employees. And it avoids disastrous rules and process. A well-intended gate agent at Dear United determines that we can no longer wear yoga pants and tights onto a plane and drags the children of employees off. That becomes front page news at the same time that they drag an employee off because it was oversold. And those became the headlines in just 1 week. One well-meaning person poorly implementing rules and process. And the United, consequently, is worth 10% less as a company. That's what happens with rules and process. So for me, culture is how you behave when no one is looking. I've got the coffee cups here because I would go into work at Silicon Valley startup wearing flip-flops and shorts, 10 a.m. One day I went in at 6:30 in the morning, and there was the CEO washing the coffee cups. Like, what the heck are you doing? It's like, you know, you guys work hard, and I'm just doing my best to support you. You can imagine how I thought about this CEO that was engaged in this behavior when no one was looking. It's all about who you hire, who you fire, and who you promote. It's about the key skills and behaviors that you seek for your company at that moment in time, and it helps to develop a commonly understood set of principles and values. These mechanisms, they help make these values and behaviors part of everyday life. They are central to the hire, fire, and promote conversations. And there's lots of wonderfully unique rituals for different companies. At Amazon, who believes in frugality, each quarter they would give the Stinky Shoe Award. So one quarter, there was a woman who noticed all the vending machines across all the country were lit, and they didn't need to be lit. So she unscrewed light bulbs in each and saved the company $200,000 a month, right? Amazing. And because of this, she was given the valued Stinky Shoe Award at one of the company meetings, okay? And they stink, really. But this was about helping people to understand how important frugality is to Amazon. And values are an important part of defining a culture. Some of these values are part of the Netflix description of culture, but values aren't enough. Because I've just shared with you, this is sort of a mother and apple pie description. These were also the values for Enron, which is a celebrated disaster in business and ethics. So good sounding values aren't enough. And you want to work to create a unique culture that's for you. Every company's got a different mission. What are the values and beliefs that you believe in? When I was at Netflix, I would never hire summer interns. But at Chegg, I would hire 30, 40 of them because we were about helping to support students in finding their careers. It's about different skills and behaviors required at different companies. And it's the characteristics of your star. So if you want to get a snapshot of what the articulation of your company's culture is, look at the stars. Look at those people who have been promoted to muckety-mucks. Look at the people that are consistently held up as role models and look at their skills and behaviors. And that's one of the fastest ways to have a sense of what your company believes in. Defining your culture requires some hard choices. And I'm giving you a few continuums here. On one hand, you could believe in freedom. Netflix believes in freedom, right? It believes in taking on risk. If you guys watch a sucky movie, it's not the end of the world. Right, so they believe very much in freedom and responsibility of independent decision-making. Boeing, on the other hand, believes more in setting rules and processes because an airplane falling out of sky is a very, very bad outcome. They have a different way of evaluating risk, and you have to figure out where you sit on that. Think about your company. Is it modeled like a family where you would never let a family member leave, right? Or is it a club soccer? Or is it Little League? Or is it a pro team? Or Netflix articulates themselves today as a dream team. The best possible person on the face of the earth in every role. And I'm not making a value statement about one being better or worse, but just make a decision about where you want to be the next few years on that. And be thoughtful about these magnets and repellents, because they help describe what's unique about you. And they provide a signal to the unique candidates that you'd like to be part of your company. And then the last continuum here is transparency versus secrecy. Netflix believes in transparency. Let everybody in the building know the quarterly earnings report a month before they are released on Wall Street. A company at the other end of this continuum is Apple. They can't afford to do that. If the plans for their next iPhone whatever were released, their competitor would have an advantage. So they're highly secretive. And these are the things that you need to think about when you define what your culture is about. Now, there are many mistakes, many reasons that the coffee cups are never clean. The first is this belief that it's about happy employees. It's about foosball, coffee, and beer. It's about creating shareholder and customer value. And it can be hard ass, and I'll give you some examples in a bit. There's oftentimes the codify too early. 8 people in a startup, good intentions is good enough. The time that you spend codifying and creating a 120-page culture deck like Netflix did is probably not a good use of time when you should be talking to your customers. Too late or not at all. And this happens. No one is responsible. There's no right answer. Is it the CEO? The CEO and Patty McCord get a lot of credit, the head of HR at Netflix for it. But there was a large team engaged. In other companies, they have sort of almost a culture committee, 8 or 10 people across the company. I don't know the right answer, but make sure someone is responsible for thinking about the articulation of this. And my biggest problem is I call it the placard at the water cooler. It's just there. It's got some things. Maybe the values spell something, but it's not deeply understood or thought about or acted on within the company. And these are the common mistakes that I see. And in the case of Uber, it's just a failure to adapt. These things are not set in stone and are maintained forever. They need to adapt and be edited over time. So I'm going to take you into Netflix. I'm going to give you a brief history. Reed Hastings had a successful company before Netflix. He sold the company for $750 million. And one of the people who worked for him or with him was Patty McCord. She became the head of HR. And Reed said, "We're doing the next startup. We're doing the next startup." And Patty kept saying, "No, no, no." And finally, Reed said, "Listen, our first startup, we had a successful outcome, but it wasn't a great company. It sucked on many regards. Let's try to make a great company." And so Patty came in, and she had one rule at the beginning, which was no bozos and no assholes. And that's what got her through the front door. In 2001, a third of the company was laid off. And everybody noticed that it was more fun. It was faster to get work done. They realized, okay, how do we build an incredibly talented team where we don't need so many people? And in 2005, we initiated building this culture deck of editing and tuning and discussing, et cetera. And we did that for 4 freaking years and then released it. And the basic issue was that employees would come in for their first week of work and they'd be surprised about some of the values. Like, what's this thing where good performance gets a generous severance package? You should have told me that last week. And yes, we published the culture deck so people would know that. And then this hysterical part was suddenly 20 million people read it, and people that were doing machine learning in banks and Wall Street, who were way into machine learning, all of a sudden said, "Hey, this company looks interesting." It was an amazing recruiting tactic. Patty left in 2012. There was an idea at Netflix called the keeper test. You would ask your boss, "Hey, if I chose to leave tomorrow, would you fight to keep me?" In the beginning of that conversation between Patty and Reed, the conclusion was that she had been great at all those stages of the company, but maybe she wasn't the right person for the next stage of the company. And she has gone off and been wonderfully happy and successful in a bunch of different roles. There was a huge revision of the deck, largely because the company had now become a culture, an international company, and that forced it to adapt. And then 2017, House of Cards was canceled. What has that got to do with culture? Well, the decision, when Kevin Spacey was accused of sexual harassment, to cut Spacey and cancel the season at season 6 took 20 minutes by one person. Like, huh, how did that fast decision make it happen? And the answer was they had done a lot of role-playing. the Me Too activity was big, and they said, what if, what if, what if, what if is the team? And Cindy, who had signed them, made the decision independently by her own to cut Kevin in season 6. And that's an illustration about how great culture and values and beliefs can form very rapid decision-making. So I'm going to give you a case. We did lots of cases at Netflix. This is how we decided what we believed in. So here's the case. It's 2006. We launched streaming in January of 2007. And a VP of content announced at a conference much like this that Netflix was going to launch its streaming effort in January 2007. He had been briefed, whatever you do, don't make a statement about our future plans and what we're going to launch and when we're going to launch it. It's a secret. And in a Q&A process where he was trying to be nice, he gave that information. And it was the headlines the next day. And the weird thing was he wasn't a VP, he was a director. And this is when we discovered that folks in LA had two sets of cards. And you had the VP card, the argument was you needed it to get the meeting with the muckety-muck at Warner, for instance. So, Barry McCarthy, the CFO, was pissed. He now has to do a press release saying, we are going to launch January 2007 streaming. And I was pissed because we had never launched anything according to schedule. And I had very little confidence that we could do that, right? This would be hard. So here's the question. Should this person's boss do nothing? Should they reprimand? Or should they fire this person? So I want to read the room. Is there anybody who wants to do nothing? Okay, this is where your arms have got to work. How many reprimand? And how many fire? Okay, so it's about 20% fire, 89% reprimand. I'm sorry, 79. All right, well, here's the way the debate went. On one hand, Netflix is about risk and experimenting and encouraging innovation. And by that, this person made a mistake and shouldn't be let go, right? On the other hand, Netflix is all about transparency. And we had the quarterly earnings reports known by everyone. And if somebody made a mistake, that transparency would have to fall away. We believed in freedom and responsibility. In this case, the person had this freedom but made a big mistake. And we debated, and we landed just about where you are, which is we chose to reprimand, except in this conversation with the employee, they said, what's the big deal? I don't think this is a big deal. And in that conversation, the decision was made to fire the person, right? And this is was helping us to understand what we believed in. In these cases, we would do lots of cases. This is a real one. What happens if an employee takes home 4 reams of paper on a Friday for their home office? Is that a do-nothing, reprimand, or fire? In that case, it was a do-nothing. It makes them more productive at home. We did zillions of these. And it helped us to establish what we believed in our values. And in this case, it was a very strong signal to the company that this person was fired. It's really, really, really important in this culture of transparency that you keep the stuff that needs to be secret a secret. And people understood that very well. So how did we get to this Netflix place? It was all about first principles. So we looked around at all of the things that most companies do. And we didn't believe in best practices, because best practices rarely are. Or borrowing something that works in one company and applying to the other often is a mistake. So here were all the things that we looked at, these different notions. And then we started asking ourselves, why do we do this and could we do better? So on required processes, we had very few. It was all about really bright, talented folks and providing strategy as context so people would make great decisions. We were tracking when you worked and when you played, and there's Reed on his BlackBerry doing an earnings call on a chairlift. Is he working or playing, right? And we said, you know, we're all well-formed adults. We can make these assessments our own about when to work or not. We opened up the compensation. Everybody that's director or VP or above knows the compensation of all. And it helped us become more mature in our understanding about market comp. It also forced us to get it right. So as soon as it was public, you can imagine the different ways that we had to make it fair. And instead of giving 2 weeks a year, we gave generous severance. If you go to the website today and start a job tomorrow and get fired the day after, it says you'll get 4 months of severance. And that exists so that in the cases of bad fit employees or people who aren't delivering results, they're making it easier for the manager to nicely let the person go. And then loyalty, there's no notion for Patty or for me or zillions of others about this is the company that you'll stay with forever, because companies change over time. And really the aspiration is we wanted it to be a great company to be from. Mechanism, imagine what it is to edit the deck for 4 years. Okay, just be thinking about each word. There was one quarterly business review. It had about, in the old days, 30 people would be in a room, and you know, later for me would be 200 director, VP level folks. We'd edit. Reed knew I was missing that meeting, so he called me to get my edits. Okay, I've edited this deck 16 times already, but this is how one of his tactics for making it front and center in many of our conversations. Did lots of cases in role-playing, and it was central to these decisions about who to hire, who to fire, and who to promote. And there's many unique ways to reinforce culture. I had the audacity to suggest, this is Barry McCarthy, that odd, curmudgeonly CFO. I was at Electronic Arts. We did a quarterly award on each value. I said, why don't we do quarterly awards on each of our values? He's like, just frickin' shoot me, Gib. Okay? And his point was, we're a pro team. We don't need that. That's more club soccer. We built the mechanisms in all of the work with the people. The culture deck published in advance so you could make these assessments yourself about whether you're a good fit. Firing, generous severance, and the idea was to get a star in every position, the best person on the face of the planet in each role. And we believed, we experimented with annual reviews, with quarterly reviews, and we finally just said it's continuous. If you can give feedback at that moment in time, do it. And we're all trained on this notion of radical candor. And we thought if people just said what they think, as opposed to doing the backroom politicking, we could make decisions faster and it would be competitive advantage. And it was largely true. And then from promotions, we didn't create career paths for folks. You could become a VP if there was a VP role available. And in my case, you know, my career advancement was to go on to Chegg and to become the chief product officer there. And that was that notion of the great role at the next company. So if you go to the Netflix culture deck, and you should go, this is the executive summary. This is the stuff that you saw in choice A at the beginning. But dig in the dirt and see the depth to which they articulate their beliefs, their values, their principles. I think it's worthwhile reading. Yes, there were challenges. Think about a company that goes from the startup on to becoming scaling, to having a pro team and then a dream team. When I showed up, I had all the starters, and none of them believed in data or consumer science or A/B testing. So the first year of my job, I had to rebuild the team so that we could do the building. Or think about me in an era of pro team. I had the good fortune to take one statistics course at business school. But in an era of AI and machine learning, that the person in my role has got a master's in statistics. Just different things needed at these different times. And the company's got 4 chapters, DVD by mail. And then it's streaming. And then it's going to international. And this is freaking improbable. The company had 22 Emmys for its original content last year, which tied with HBO. That's amazing, but think about the different skills, the different kinds of peoples that you need at each of these chapters. And a huge challenge, imagine you believe in radical candor, and now you have 500 employees that live in Japan. Does the company adapt to them, or do they adapt to the company? And what they ended up doing was training folks in Japan on these concepts of continuous feedback and radical candor and got them to a place where they're very comfortable with that. And it just took extra effort and investment. And those cultural issues, as they grew as a worldwide company, happened again and again. So I have another case for you. I hired Todd Yellen, director level. I only hired director folks. They had nobody who worked for them. I expected them to think and do, trying to build a very small organization. He rocked. Delivered exceptional results. And he was a cultural carrier. He had intellectual curiosity. He was courageous. He was wonderfully candid. He exemplified many of the values of the company, and nobody worked for him. And the question is this. Should you promote him to VP or not? That's the question. So I want to read the room. How many are ready to promote Todd to VP? And how many are not promotes? Okay, looks like three quarters not. I'll tell you what we did. We chose to promote him. And the reasons, by the way, he continues to be there. How many watch Black Mirror Bandersnatch? Okay, it's this experiment in interactive storytelling, which is way cool, and who knows what the future will look like. But that's the kind of stuff that Todd is engaged in today. And so for the learnings, the key question was this role in personalization, which is wicked, wicked important, VP worthy? Does anybody know Elaine on Friends and Sponge worthy? Oh, yeah, I got a nervous laughter. Okay, good. Well, the role was VP worthy. We were encouraging lean organizations, so we didn't want to create this idea that you had to build an empire in order to become a VP. And this was a celebration of culture. Todd Yellen embodies the beliefs and values of the companies. He's being promoted to VP. And it was a wonderful thing. And he was a great role model to other leaders over time. All right, the Dell model. So I wanted to give you something that you take to work tomorrow when you reflect on these things and see how you're doing and then work to get better. So do not cut and paste the Netflix culture and bring it to yours. It'll be a disaster. You've already told me that you're not a fit because like three of you picked A at the beginning. It's going to be unique culture for your company, your mission, and the stage of company. And the Dell model is pretty simple, which is first, make sure it's clearly defined. Second, commit to ongoing editing of the articulation and change over time, and then live it, and live it large. So for me, this is the healthy culture checklist. In the define it, is it clear that you need to be engaged in this, and who owns defining the culture? Look at the behaviors of your stars, their behaviors and skills, as ways to understand what are the things that you value. Make the hard choices. Are you about freedom and control? Are you a family? Are you a pro team? And then think about what's unique to you, the magnets and the repellents in describing your culture. And then edit it. Go to first principles. Ask yourself, why do we do these things? And could we do it better? Engage in experiments to see what works. Try cases. What would you do if? And then you will be hiring folks, and you will notice that they are awesome. And they are a reflection of the new skills and behaviors that you want as the company is growing. And this is the acknowledgement that some of these things have to change. And then live it. What are the mechanisms to help people day to day understand what's on culture and off culture? Make it central to the hire, fire, and promote conversation. And everybody in the company should be questioning the articulation of the culture. Does this make sense? And they should certainly point out behaviors that are not consistent with it. And then last, this is supposed to be the antidote to process and rules. So have some fun with it and celebrate. And this is an ongoing process. It continues forever. You define, you edit, and then you live. So I want to end. There's these two fish. One fish is swimming along. The other fish comes the other way and looks at the fish and says, "How's the water?" And the other fish looks at him and says, "What the heck is water?" So for me, that's what culture is. Culture is like water to a fish. You can't see it, and it's hard to know exactly what it is, but it governs everything that we do, everything that is possible. And your job as product leaders is eventually to do the impossible, to dent the universe. So think about Dear Netflix that went from freaking DVD by mail to being a creative leader in storytelling. And this is them celebrating 100 million members. A big party, a big celebration of their success, which is largely out of culture and of strategy. So with that, I'd like to say thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.